Hide FM.
Hello, this is DJ Gleesy. You're listening to Kaleidoscope on Hyde FM. Today I'm talking about Moody Man. First we're hearing I Can't Kick This Feeling When It Hits from 1996. Gonna do My main source for today's episode is this really sick Red Bull Music Academy interview that I watched. It's from 2011, and it's obviously an interview between Moody Man and like a Red Bull guy. If you don't know anything about Moody Man, he's kind of a Detroit legend. He was born Kenny Dixon Jr. in LA to two Detroit parents, and who soon moved straight back to Detroit when he was only 3 weeks old. His grandfather owned a jazz club in Detroit that was a 55 plus jazz club, and his father was, as Moody Man says, an experimental musician. And the stage name Moody Man came from his nickname growing up, Moody. He grew up in a specific Detroit era where the music scene was, to say the least, an extreme melting pot. Hip-hop music was kind of coming in from New York. House music was cycling in from Chicago, and there was a local techno scene being pioneered by like Juan Atkins and other local names. He also cited in this interview the intense amount of influence that the local radio scene had on him growing up, which I think is super sick considering I'm a big radio nut myself. One radio DJ that he mentioned was the Electrifying Mojo and also the station WJZZ. And he makes a big point to talk about how Detroit radio stations in this era really were playing anything and everything, and they were sourcing music that they thought their audiences would want to hear. It wasn't like a specifically genre-based radio station. If the DJ liked the track, they were going to spin it. And if they thought the community was going to like the track, they were going to put it on there. So they were hearing disco, funk, R&B, soul, jazz, electro, acid, gospel, folk, et cetera, et cetera. And he talks a lot about this original kind of soulful quality of early techno that was blossoming in Detroit. A funny little story that he tells is about his first time hearing Kraftwerk and thinking that Kraftwerk was a duo out of Detroit, later to only go on to learn that they were Germans. But just like because he heard it on the local radio or at the local roller rink, he just kind of assumed everything was local, even though really he was getting a huge variety in music, which really created his sound. He started out by making hip-hop beats for local hip-hop artists, most notably K-Stone, who said about him, "We loved his production because he always used the funkiest old records. Moody would pick some of the craziest loops, old school loops from different types of records. He would use breakbeats and vocal samples to create various different hip-hop grooves and beats. We would come up with all kinds of dope ideas." And while he was doing this, he was DJing at clubs simultaneously. And then his first record under Moody Man came out in 1992. And this is Music People a little later from 1996, but I just want to let us hear it before I yap a little longer. This is off of his album Silent Introduction. We'll be right back.
part of my environment, you see. I don't expect you to understand. I don't. I don't think a lot of motherfuckers understand. But, you know, all money ain't good money, you know. I mean, I'm a nigga from the D. Let me tell you, I could think a million ways of getting paid in this motherfucker, you know. Driving down 8 with bricks in my pocket, up on Grand River doing me, you know. I could think of a million ways to get paid, this motherfucker. Unfortunately, music is not a way for me to get paid. It is just something I do. I do it. I did it long before I seen my first dollar. And I'm gonna do it long after I done sold my last, you know. You got a lot of motherfuckers that just be out here just be doing shit for the bill, for the dollar bill, this and that, and then get mad because they ain't getting paid enough, or they didn't get paid last time, or you got someone that not gonna even make no music until they get paid, and then you got others just running around making whatever's the new fad for these kids, you know, or whatever. You know, it becomes complicated, and as far as I'm concerned, if the shit becomes a job for me, I'm doing it for the wrong reasons, you dig? I mean, you got all these motherfuckers tricking over the dollar bill, you know. You know, just do anything for it. Have a parade down the wrong street or something for that dollar bill, you know. They're tricking over that motherfucker. Yeah, I guess that you understand. I've been broke all my motherfucking life, you know. I ain't missing nothing. I'm just now getting beans with my rice, you know? Don't get me wrong, you know. But I just can't see myself out here tricking for no dollar bill, out here tricking like that, you know? I throw that dollar bill in the street like a real bitch and make that bitch work. That bitch gonna be paying my rent. That bitch gonna be putting food on the table. I'm gonna be stuffing that bitch in my pocket. Be handing that bitch to somebody else, but whatever goes on, that bitch gonna be doing what the hell I want to do. But one thing a nigga ain't gonna be doing, a nigga ain't gonna be chasing that bitch. I like to thank my father for that, you dig? You know. This brother not only showed me how to survive, why should the blues be so at home here?
Well, America provided the atmosphere. America provided the atmosphere for the blues, and the blues was born. The blues was born on the American wilderness. The blues was born on the beaches where the slave ship docked. Born on the slave man's auction block. The blues was born and carried on the howling wind. The blues grew up a slave. The blues grew up as property. The blues grew up in Nat Turner visions. The blues grew up in Harriet Tubman courage. The blues grew up in small town deprivation. The blues grew up in big city isolation. The blues grew up in the nightmares of the white man. The blues grew up in the blues singing of Bessie and Billy and Mom. The blues grew up in Satchmo's horn, on Duke's piano, in Langston's poetry, on Robeson's baritone. The point is that the blues is gone.
As I think has been made clear, what Moody Man went on to be known for is his sample-based music. For example, the track that just started, we're listening to America from 1997. What we just heard in the beginning is a spoken word poem from Gil Scott-Heron combined with a drum loop from jazz funk drummer Idris Muhammad. He was a sampler of all the things, of speeches, of poems, of music, of the radio, of whatever came his way. He told a story about the day that Marvin Gaye died, just recording the entire radio broadcast from that day and sampling it in track after track after track. A sampler of Prince, of Quincy Jones, of Curtis Mayfield. And as you've heard so far, most of his tracks consist of just a few simple loops and filters, but it's atmospheric with the use of crowd noise and voices cutting in at kind of seemingly random times, while at equally random times the drum loops cut out, leaving anyone on the dance floor kind of wondering when it might drop again. He goes on to influence many other well-renowned sample-based electronic musician producers like Forte and Caribou, and even there's a ton of stories about him like bumping shoulders in Detroit record stores with Jay Dilla and people of the likes, who obviously are heavily sample-based artists too. In his start in 1992, he was using only borrowed equipment. He tells a super funny story about bringing his cassette deck into a guitar center and recording an entire project in there, just like bootlegging the guitar center equipment before he actually gets his hands on some of his own. Let's just listen for now. Thank you. You're hearing Don't You Want My Love off of his 2000 project, Forever Nevermore. This was like the first Moody Man track I ever heard, I think, and I automatically just fell in love. To be fair, now my favorite tracks of his are his longer, more winding, and kind of, I don't know, like special in the way where things cut in and out in a way you wouldn't expect, but this one is just a classic, and I think follows an easier pattern for easier listening. He established KDJ Music, his own record label based off of his own name, in 1994. And as he talked about in the Red Bull Music Academy video that I spent all morning watching, he really wanted to start the label to focus helping his community. He wanted to make money for the people in his Detroit community that couldn't, and really put the money back into the community. He's like super Detroit ride or die. He literally was like, if Detroit burns, watch me burn in it. I'm never leaving. And for him, making music was never about traveling far and wide or touring or making a ton of money. It was always really just for people to hear his sound and to build a reputation for his community. And I think a little story that he tells that kind of speaks on this is he talks about record scarcity. And there's a huge kind of cult following of his like physical record releases because not many of them exist out there. And a quote from him on this is, "At first I can only afford to press up to 150 records, and now maybe I could do 3,000 or 4,000. I just want to make sure that they sell. I don't want nothing coming back." And he talks about how expensive it was to print records, and that he wasn't wasting money on this and that, and he wasn't really trying to like goose the market. He just only had the money to print so many. Sometimes he would print different mixes or masters, depending on the record, on where the record was selling. And so the records would all be labeled the same, but if you bought it in Chicago instead of Detroit, you would end up with like a longer mix. And he says people are always coming to him, asking him questions about that. He's like, it's just how it was. I was broke. anyway, this track is, that I'll let run through, is People, from 2003, off of his project Silence in the Secret Garden.
We'll be right back.
This is Black Mahogany off of Black Mahogany from 2004. Thank you. Moody Man had a global cult following in the 90s, especially in Europe, but he stayed super enigmatic. Like, people were out here buying his records without ever hearing them as long as they had the KDJ label on them. And then beginning in kind of the 2000s, he came out of the shadows a little bit more. He was DJing more live shows, and he was doing a few, but still not many interviews. The 2011 interview that I watched with Red Bull came post, I think, his DJ Kicks album came out, and he like had to get on some publicity. But he had no problem selling his records, even when people didn't really know who he was. He's big in this interview about talking about how his music really has nothing to do with his identity, which obviously can't possibly be true, but I like the principality behind it, that the idea, right, that it doesn't matter who he is, it matters the music, even though he's so heavily influenced by his location specifically. When he describes his own music, he doesn't describe it in a genre-based way. He says it depends locationally, like in the world, people see him more as a DJ, but in Detroit, he's always kind of throwing these live production type shows, and people really see him more as a live musician. And he gets roped in a lot with house and techno, but doesn't even really identify himself that way. So he's kind of a super interesting character in the scene for that reason. His live shows, he speaks about them and about how they're really about bringing his own living space and environment to stage. Like, literally, he's like recreating his bedroom on stage and like getting freaky up there, apparently. He says he's banned from Texas for doing so. And the other key thing about his sound is his analogness. And it really comes just from his comfortability with his analog setup. It's not really a matter of principle. It's just, why change a good thing when it's already, when you've already got it going for you? This is Shades of Jay, also off of Black Mahogany. It's uses a sample of a 1977 London concert version of Marvin Gaye's Come Get to This and a keyboard flourish from Bob James's Spunky.
And I
Before I run us into my final track, I just want to talk about my major takeaways from the Red Bull interview that I listened to and why I wanted to talk about Moody Man today. I realized I didn't touch a ton on like who went on to kind of continue his legacy and his influence, but I think it's because they're less tangible examples and more general ideas. Like, for example, how he helped kind of the proliferation of sample-based electronic music and how much that has gone on to shape the soundscape that we hear today. Obviously, that's kind of a straight thread from hip-hop into house music and into the influences that really brought him up in Detroit, and it makes sense. But also the ability for his like highly localized music straight from Detroit to have such a global following and impact is something that really stood out to me. And finally, the fact that he had such a myriad of influential source materials exposes really the true nature of electronica. No single song comes about, or no single artist comes about, without being in response to the years and years of electronic music history. And I think he's just a great example of that, not to mention a favorite artist of mine. So for this final track, I've got Got Me Coming Back Right Now off of his 2019 project Sinner, KDJ 48. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next month. I hope you love Moody Man as much as I do.
get doing all your chores. What you wanna do? Or would you rather be tied you bound on this hip floor?